Mother, man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem! Nothing like screaming my fucking bald ass off in the new year, man.
Happy fucking new year, Pete. How you doing over there, dude?
Nice. I'm doing pretty good, brother. We are doing episode 38, which is crazy. They just keep going. But the first episode of 2019 done on January 1st.
It's a new year. We're doing legit doing it on New Year's Day.
Exactly. And I think that's cool. And definitely digging doing a podcast on a Tuesday. Always a good thing.
Hell yeah, it is.
So, but dude, it's crazy to think I was doing the math. We're 3 months from the 50th episode, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome, dude. I can't wait till April. We're going to figure something out.
First week of April, it's going to be. So it's going to go down. We've got a really good, some good things in mind. We'll kind of give you some hints, but we won't divulge it all until it's going down.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be killer.
Number 50 going to be fun.
It is. It is. Now, episode 37, I thought was a good one. It was the last one of the year. On Stephen Avery, which was one we always thought would be cool to do.
Just talk our opinions about it, because obviously everybody knows a lot about Stephen Avery.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a huge, the Making a Murderer show is just monster, you know, and so we knew there'd be a lot of people digging it, and we got some good feedback.
Yeah, and Joey was here for it.
Yeah, Joey was here.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, it was a good time, and, you know, we did seem to have some audio issues, which we think could have been attributed to a posergeist amongst us. But that's what CCK is here to stand vigil.
Keep the horns in the air forever, dude.
He is. He's like a scarecrow to the posergeist. They don't want to fuck with him. And I think that we just had a lot of bad mojo going on because even CCK wasn't able to fully get rid of it. But I think he's good now. He's standing tall. Took the hat off him and the garland. I thought
it's
we're
just
past
too much
it.
Christmas cheer, dude. It's like I put my time in.
We're fucking metal now, you know, moving into some more nastier shit. We'll adorn CCK, I'm sure, with other things as we go around. But this week we're doing one that I know you two have been wanting to do for a while now.
Yeah, Tommy.
Because when we were doing the Iceman episode, and I remember we talked as we were both watching these documentaries and just flipping the fuck out, the Tommy Karate
just
one
came across
up.
Fucking Tommy Patera, dude. Like, oh, shit, this guy.
And I'm looking at the title with Tommy Karate Patera. I'm like, what the fuck is that? That's a weird mobster name, you know?
But
of course, I had to watch it, and it was fucking off the hook, dude. It was so crazy.
So good, dude.
Yeah, I really get a kick out of Tommy, and so it's an interesting story. But he was one sadistic motherfucker. I mean,
like, he wasn't just a hitman. He was a serial killer.
He was, dude.
Like, a legit serial killer.
Oh, yeah. Because the stuff he did was like the serial killer stuff with the mementos of the victims.
And how he did shit. Like, he wasn't just a mafia hitman.
No.
He was straight up a serial killer.
He was. He really fucking got into this shit. So, but the karate thing, of course, we'll talk about it, was his martial arts background, where he actually studied in Japan and became like a fucking fighting machine.
Yes, he did.
You know, honing his skills in this like master... martial arts environment.
Mickey Mouse and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a very interesting guy, which we'll get to. But he was a bunch of classic mobsters hanging out with him, which we'll get into some of those funny nicknames and shit, which are always good when you watch.
I love
like
mafia
Goodfellas.
Nicknames, man. It's
they
like,
are.
Hey, yo.
Yeah, and I mean, being Italian myself, I find it funny. Like,
right.
I know some people get uptight about it. It's like, come on.
It's like Bronstein. Oh, that's Jimmy Whispers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or the guys in Goodfellas with the yeah. two times. Yeah,
I'm going to go get the papers. Get the papers.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, I love that shit. This just fucking hilarious. Great. So there was one Fat Andy was his nickname. I'm like, man, that's kind of cold.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, dude.
Hey, Fat Andy. Hey, huh? Fat Andy. So since we're doing that, you know, CK, of course, we've got a live call coming from him, but he thought doing Dream Theater.
Since they're from the area of.
Yeah, where Tommy Karate did his thing. We thought that would be
cool. Where he had his dojo.
Right. Totally. Totally. So it should be interesting to hear what he's got to say about them. Also a funny story when we do that about how I actually turned down the chance to try out for Dream Theater many, many years ago. So that'll be fun to share.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
When we get into that. So we kind of fucked up last week.
We totally skipped Killer Cage Match. Like after we were done recording, we're like, dude, we didn't fucking do that.
We had so many problems, though. When we got done, it was late.
Yeah,
our minds
were wrecked.
I was just completely fried. And by the time I had already started uploading the episode, we were going down the stairs, literally, at the house.
And it was like, you know what we didn't do?
Right.
Killer Cage Match. It's like, oh, fuck. Well, yeah. Whatever. So
now here's what I thought. If somebody commented on Facebook, this was just me. I didn't announce this. For obvious reasons. If somebody would have commented on Facebook that said, hey, what the fuck, man? There was no Killer Cage Match. I was going to give them like a shirt, a koozie, stickers.
Right, right.
Like just completely hook them up. Not one person pointed it out. So unfortunately, the deal is over now.
I did have a couple people personally mention it to me.
Oh, they did?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it would have been funny for somebody to get up there and be like, hey, what the hell happened? Yeah. So
come on, dude.
Yeah. So I'm sure some people like you talked to did notice. But since we fucked up, we thought it would be cool to do something different and do a tag team.
Tag teams.
So we're going to have one match with double the people to make up for fucking up last week.
Yeah, yeah. Because as you know, last week we mentioned Albert Fish and Lizzie Borden.
Right.
So they're definitely still going against each
other. So they're
going to
be a team now. So instead of being against, they're the team now. Yeah, they're the tag team.
Oh, shit.
And they're going up against Richard Chase and OJ Simpson.
Yes, OJ. The juice.
So Richard Chase is a fucking vampire, fucking freak dude.
Vampire.
Legit. Yeah.
Like vampire, drinking like in the blood. Realest sense of a vampire.
Right. And OJ, dude, is like Rage Master, so it
and
is
And he's
prime.
A fucking big old beast.
Right. So we'll talk about that. And we did four objects.
Yes.
Since we fucked
gotta
up.
Have a four.
We doubled everything. So these four are going to be fighting it out in a cage with really funny objects. So you guys will enjoy that, and we'll announce that in the Mayhem segment, we promise. So this time we won't forget.
No, we got the cage match for real today.
Right, it's going to be good. And then thanks again, all you guys listening, man. We really appreciate it. Yeah. You know?
I like the feedback, and it's great that you guys are listening. We appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, it is really cool, and just seeing all the different places, too. It just always blows my mind to see. Yeah, like Cedar Rapids, Iowa has been on the top 10 now for a while.
Fuck yeah.
And we talked about our boys over there at University of Iowa. Thanks, guys. Hopefully, with the semester now starting up again soon, that they'll be back into listening to some Murder Metal Mayhem.
Getting back in there, hell yeah.
In the dorms like we were talking about.
We fucking do this for fun. So the fact that we got people listening is fucking.
Yeah. And those guys are like getting together and like partying it up and listening together, which is even the cooler thing.
Crack a beer.
So yeah, that's fucking great, guys. So we really do appreciate that. And there's a lot of really good things coming up this year. That's going to be fucking awesome. So without delay, I think we need to get our fucking murder on karate style.
Chop, chop, motherfucker.
How about some Orange Goblin, dude?
Yes, sir. That's one of them CK picks, dude. I was jamming that album. What is a Wolf Bites Back?
Yeah,
yeah, dude. Yeah, it's good as shit. Killer, Sons of man. Salem, right there. Like, yeah, it's good. I mean, not 100% my style of shit, but it's still fucking it. It fucking jams.
I like the stuff like that more. They do mellow out a little bit, and it, like you said, it's not totally like my thing either. For like just listening to it through and through. But certain, yeah. So I love this shit, man. When they jam like that, I really dig it.
Yeah, that song fucking kicks ass.
They are kick ass. So,
hell yeah.
We are in our murder segment, of course, talking Tommy Patera, which we know as Tommy Karate.
Tommy Karate.
But he was born in 1954 in Brooklyn, New York. So yeah,
Out there on the East Coast, driving his car into your garbage.
He grew up in a tough section of, and this is just so appropriate.
I love it.
Gravesend.
Yeah, Gravesend, Illinois. Or yeah, Brooklyn.
Yeah,
I
so
said
the
Illinois.
Gravesend neighborhood of Brooklyn. I mean, that doesn't get much more brutal than that.
I love that name, man.
And he was beat up regularly for being a small kid and for having a real high squeaky voice, which just made it really bad.
Fucking bad, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. So he was just, he just really had this feminine voice, which apparently he, his dad also had the same thing. So it was just
a genetic thing.
Right. It was a genetic thing. And so he just made the abuse that much worse. And he would, you know, eventually, though, grow up to take that rage, which we see in a lot of these serial killers we talk about.
He definitely builds it in like a freaking
He does,
piece
and
of
when
dynamite.
It erupts, dude, he goes fucking nuts and becomes one of the most sadistic murderers in mafia fucking history, man.
Yeah, like I said, not
brutal.
Just a hitman, serial killer.
He is. He was definitely a serial killer, and he was one of the most feared. He took it to another level, which was, like you said, made him a serial killer with the mementos he would keep of the victims. And we're going to get into one especially that was like the final one.
Yeah, the final one.
Straight up sick. And, you know, that was one of those things where, you know, you think, wow, this is not the typical guy comes in and shoots a bunch of people
and
leaves.
His disposal of the bodies was impeccable, dude.
Yeah, and he had a system down, which we'll get into, is just really fucked up.
Great system.
Yeah, and he's still alive today in federal prison, and we'll discuss
talk about that.
Yeah.
And another guy in this story.
Exactly, another guy, another character from this tale. And all the details and what gave him, of course, the name Tommy Karate. So definitely been excited about this one. It's just an interesting, unique story I don't think many people know about. So he grew up loving the 1966 show The Green Hornet, but really it was
Bruce Lee's character. Yeah, it was Bruce Lee's character and how he, the martial arts and how he stood up for the justice or
right. He would
kept,
be like
he kept
wrong
his code.
And he would like
code.
Step up and like take care of the bad guys.
Exactly.
Like said,
yeah.
Followed a strict code.
Yeah. Bruce Lee kept his code as, what was his name? Fucking.
That
God
I don't know.
So,
I don't know what his name was on the show.
I'm going to shut up about it.
But Tommy was, he was obsessed with it. He really liked it. He loved the martial arts part and he begged his parents to let him take lessons.
Kato. It was fucking Kato.
Nice. That's all right. Sometimes it happens like that. And as you get older, you'll see it gets worse.
Yeah,
as
great.
You see me do all the time. So they, but his parents knew he was getting beat up and, you know, they figured it would be good for him, you know, if he could defend himself because tough streets, man, Gravesend, Brooklyn, man, we're talking some pretty, you know,
yeah,
tough
in,
fucking
in the
grounds,
60s,
man.
Too.
Yeah, I mean, it was brutal.
67.
60s into the 70s, yeah. Some pretty tough shit. So his dad, you know, because he had that same thing, you know, went ahead and let him take the lessons. And
some
I think, you
karate.
Know, that was where he really found his thing because he knew that his son needed some help. Some of the mobsters, like we said, that he worked with said he sounded like Mickey or even Minnie Mouse when he talked. So,
dude, you got to have a high.
Wow.
Hey, guys.
I mean, I can't imagine how fucked up that would be. Some dude that looks like kind of like Danzig,
but walking like around.
Really, I mean, buff. I mean, this dude was like a fitness fucking freak.
So is it like the same? Is it worse? Like compare it to Mike Tyson, as big as he is with his voice.
Probably similar like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's a great analogy because, yeah, who the fuck's going to mess with that dude? Like,
yeah, yeah.
No, dude, you're all good, man. You know, I'm not going to say shit.
When he got to his shit, he was like, nobody wanted to fuck with his Mickey Mouse voice. They'd be like, hey,
fuck
dude.
No, I would. Yeah, nobody's going to mess with him when he becomes what he does, though. Now, as we mentioned, the bullying part of this does seem to be kind of a common trend we see with a lot of these serial killers.
A lot, whether it be
abuse at home or like bullying at school. It always seems like that becomes part of the thing, you know, like they've endured
this violence during their childhood or whatever. Right. So as they get older,
they bottle it up and then it just fucking explodes, man. It's
that's life.
Up.
That's how life works.
Right.
So whatever.
So as he gets into his teens, he enters a martial arts contest in Sheepshead Bay. That's another good one. Brutal names.
So decapitation, too.
Right.
All right.
Maybe that's where cattle decapitation got there. Fuck, if there's a Sheepshead Bay, why can't we call the band Cattle Decapitation?
Fuck, who knows?
Or Pig Destroyer or some Pig animal Destroyer. Destruction of some sort. So he wins a trip. He wins the contest. He goes on a trip to Japan, which is crazy.
He was there for like a little over 2 years.
He was there for 2 years. He studied under the revered Hiroshi Masumi, so a big name in the martial arts biz at that time, which would have been in the 70s.
And definitely honing his martial arts skills. And at the same time, he's that's pretty much when he started reading the books about dismemberment or the autopsy books and whatever, right?
Yeah, he really got into it. I mean, he like immersed himself into the martial arts and he learned lots of things. I thought it was kind of funny that they said he got a job when his scholarship was over. He continued to stay and he worked.
Yeah, he got a job so he
at
could
a chopstick factory. I thought that was like so stereotypical. Almost like they wrote that in, but that's like what they said.
Dude, the whole thing is kind of like a 1980s, like Karate Kid style movie, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of interesting, but he becomes a master at, and I don't know these terms, so I had to look things up, the tangfa, which are the fighting sticks with the handles, the nunchucks, of course, we know what those are, and the katana, which is a curve, basically a samurai sword. So he was like a master at all those, at that level too in Japan. I mean, that must have been
When you're in Japan,
fucking hardcore
doing it, and you're a master there. Because I can't even fucking kick my leg over my fucking knee,
dude. None of us could. This dude was a beast, and he grows his hair long to look like Bruce Lee.
And it's black and shit like Bruce Lee.
Yeah,
and shit.
Fucking. And he just really becomes like. Like I said,
the
like
character.
A physical fitness fucking freak, and just is just a fighting machine, just crazy. He becomes incredibly tough. He's still obviously a shorter guy, but his skills earn him the name Tommy Karate among the mobsters. So they
fucking
always come up with
the
good ones.
The best nicknames, dude.
The best, yeah. So Tommy Karate it is. And he joins the Bonanno crime family when he gets back. So from when he gets back from Japan, he hooks up with the Bonannos, which are definitely a very well-known family at the time. And he earns his reputation as a cold-blooded killer and a good earner. He was very, very good at making money. And of course, that's what they want. They want people to make money.
Definitely. Give me that money, man.
And people that are not afraid to fucking take care of business.
And other people are afraid of anyway, because if you got Tommy coming at you, motherfuckers going to be like, oh shit.
They said that like the big guns were like, didn't want to fuck with this dude.
I ain't fucking around
like,
with
the
this
worst
guy.
Of the worst were afraid of this guy.
Yeah. He's
so,
fucking
I mean, that's,
bad dude.
That's some serious shit, you know?
Fucking, they have Oh, shit.
He marries his longtime love, Celeste Lipari, another good Italian name. And they have a ready-made family.
Celeste was his wife?
Yes, for a short period of time.
I thought so. Okay.
Yeah, he marries her, and she's already got a daughter from another marriage, but it doesn't last long. It's like a year or two. The Bonanno captains that Tommy worked with were some of the classic in the annals of mafia crime. Like, I love these names, dude. Sonny, Red, Indelicato.
I love the Indelicato last name.
That's a great last name. Frank Lino, Dominic Trinchera, and Philip Giacconi, which is a good one. The best all-time name, though, when I heard this in the documentary, I was just losing my shit because I thought this was just too much. Whack, whack.
That's what I do every night, man.
Well, we know Couch Fucker was a prolific whack whacker, man.
My couch is innocent.
Your couch is still a virgin as far as you know.
Yes, my couch is in it.
That's cool.
You know, it used to be your son's couch, so I don't fucking
we'd have
know.
To check with
hey,
him.
Joey, did you rip my couch?
You know, when I was driving to Joey's today, it's funny we say this because I should have stopped and took a picture, but somebody threw. I was in the country, and somebody threw a couch off on the side of the road, and I almost took a picture of it and say, "Like, damn, like
throw that whore away or
throw her away, man." Fucking couch hoe fucking thrown to the side of the road.
That's fucking good as shit.
I was just like, oh no. So who knows? Awesome. So we'll have to check with him and see if he's done anything to the couch.
Whack whack.
Exactly. But whack whack for the real name of whack whack was Anthony Bruno Indelicato. So another
Indelicato, yeah.
And after a big 1981 mob hit that killed three rival bosses, things are really shaken up. But Tommy seizes the opportunity, rises up, and becomes a made man in the mob soon after that.
And that's some high up shit in the mob.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, like I said, he's an earner, and he's not afraid to kill people, and he's fucking aces because everybody's afraid of him, and they love that shit. So he was definitely in his zone doing his thing and making people a lot of money and doing very well himself. He was...
He had more than one place of residence.
Yes.
So, like, he's doing good.
Yeah. And then, now, some claim that Tommy's body count was as high as 60, which is a lot, obviously. That's like Chikatilo-like numbers, which is fucked.
Which is a high fucking number, yeah.
Now, the thing that separates Tommy from the other classic mobsters, like we said, is he was directly involved. So, this isn't like... somebody
he
afar
put the hit
going
out.
Take care of so and so and
yeah,
just make it happen.
Tommy went and actually did the work.
Right. He was pulling the trigger or like slitting throats. I mean, like hard fucking core shit.
Yeah, 100%.
Not
he relished
afraid to fucking get in it and dirty and then.
And get bloody.
This was the most fucked up thing. You know, because like I said, everybody's afraid of this dude because he would strip down completely naked.
And put the motherfuckers in the bathtub and he'd get the water flow temperature just right. Dude.
Right.
And he fucking just get in the bathtub with the body.
Yeah.
And just start hacking him up. And the water drain it down. He got.
Yeah.
Like I said,
he knew what he was doing because he had books on it.
Yeah, like I said, the books he had, how to butcher things and make it.
So he knew where to cut where it went much smoother than if you didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah, if he's taking like the arm off and you just pull it a certain way and take the knife or the saw or whatever that he's using.
Right.
And he know exactly where to go to make it slice through. Like,
right.
This dude was a serial
killer. Oh, he was a
pro,
dude. Yeah, and he did it in six pieces. The arms, the legs, the torso, and then the head.
Yeah,
totally. And he would bury the head in a different place so that they wouldn't be able to
identify
him
the body
as easy.
Through dental records
right.
and shit.
Yeah, the dude, it was like a machine. So six parts, and he would bury him in plastic and then put him in suitcases.
And bury the entire fucking suitcase.
Yeah,
as
everything.
A fucking...
It's fucked up. But he like relished in this shit And he would, you know, like, not be afraid to get right in there, man. That was, like, his thing, man. He wanted to.
Dude, his burial ground is the best choice he could have ever found, too.
Dude, very, very smart. Very, very smart. Now, he was in the drug business, and that's always been known for, you know, brutal violence, savage fucking hits. I mean, like, the Colombians, you know, we've heard stories, and there's movies and
all
books,
the decapitations and
all
the that
Mexican
shit,
gangs. I mean, fucking brutal ass shit, you know. So that business just in general is very violent. A lot of money. And so you're going to have a lot of violence.
But he didn't do drugs, which is weird. Well, not weird, I guess. Like, he's like, no. I don't care about these people's life. I just want their fucking money.
Oh, yeah. He was smart because, you know, most people that are, you know, good at that, know that not using it is good because the people that use it are a fucking mess, you know.
Don't be Scarface. Like, don't get high on your own supply for sure.
Right. And so Tommy was all about that.
Yeah.
So he was a pro. Now he, you know, was known to sleep all day and then come out at night, you know, very vampire-ish. He would be up till 3 or 4 in the morning because he had his bar, the Just Us Lounge. I love that.
I love that name too.
Very stereotypical in Brooklyn. It was actually in business up until like the 80s.
Oh, really?
Like after he was gone, it was still going on, but not much longer. I think I read.
We should open a bar.
Yeah. Murder Metal Mayhem.
Just Us Two.
Just Us Two. T-O-O.
Yeah, exactly.
With a comma, though. Yeah. Comma two. You know, that would be grammatically correct.
Just Us.
Yes.
Two. Yeah. Not just. All right, let's keep going, man.
Yeah. So he looked kind of like Danzig with the black slick back hair, muscular, intense, always in black, very scary looking dude. They were scared shitless because this dude had like a hair trigger fucking temper and did not take any bullshit. I mean, he was very, very intense and not probably very pleasant, I wouldn't think, just to be around him. Very, very up and down and kind of all over the place.
I bet you if you walked up to him and you said, hey, what's up with that voice, dude? You probably got laid out.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, you're getting a bullet in the head.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I can't imagine him taking anything, criticism, because he doesn't need to. He's a fucking badass.
I can take care of him.
Now, he divorces Celeste, and he finds a girlfriend who's a drug addict, and she's a fucking mess, man. He's completely in love with her, can't get her to stop using coke, though. He finds out that her friend Phyllis is the way she typically gets the drugs. See, so Tommy
This is where I'm confused. Celeste is the one that Phyllis is her friend. She had a wife. He had a wife before Celeste.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong, dude. That's very possible. There's a lot of names in this story, so it's very possible that Celeste was the girlfriend and not the wife. I know he married somebody who was like his childhood sweetheart.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't Celeste.
So it must have been another. So Celeste is the girlfriend. And he threatens like all the dealers, like do not sell to her, you know.
No, he warned them
like, do not fucking do it. He warned Phyllis.
Yeah, he's like, don't fucking give her, because he blamed all of Celeste's drug addiction on Phyllis.
Right.
So he told her, he's like, stop with the bullshit. And he told Celeste too, like, stop hanging out with her. And they never did.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he tried, but he was not successful. But yeah, he was blaming Phyllis for everything, which, you know, she was a mess too. But that's, you know, his girlfriend's the one that was doing this shit, you know. So anyway, one of Tommy's crew members, Frank Ganji, who becomes a big part of this story, he becomes involved with Phyllis. Despite the fact that Tommy don't like her.
Yeah, a lot of cocaine sex.
Big time. Ganji finds out that Tommy's girlfriend dies while partying with Phyllis, and he knows the shit's going to hit the fan because they were partying with coke, and then she fucking shot herself up with heroin to fall asleep.
Because they've been, that's how they like to get down.
And she OD'd, and fucking that was it.
And then Tommy shows up there, and he was fucking pissed.
Yeah, I mean, he vows to kill Phyllis right in front of a cop.
Yeah, there was one single cop there when he showed up at the apartment, because it was at another dude's apartment that liked it, because they ran out of coke, so they went to go get coke, and the dude they got it from, it was their apartment, or his apartment they were at.
Right.
There was one cop there, and he already knew Tommy. They knew each other.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Right. It's the mafia, dude.
Yeah, he's on the payroll probably. But yeah, I mean, he shows up and he flips the fuck out. He threatens Phyllis right in front of the cops. They tell him to get lost, you know, get out of here, Tommy. And so he's out of there. But he definitely, you know, has it out. I mean, he threatens. Yeah, she's going
to
be
trying
dead.
To find her forever.
Yeah. And Ganji got her to fucking lay low. But it didn't last long. She started coming back for drugs and going to her usual bars and was not hiding the fact she was back. And so once Tommy finds out, then he's back on it, man.
Never mind. You know what I said about the where they got the drugs from was the dealer's house?
Yeah.
That's where Phyllis dies.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, like I said, dude, it's very confusing with a lot of these different locations and all these people moving in and out. So we do our best on here, but we're certainly not perfect with the little, stuff like that. So,
right.
Now, Tommy Karate did something that no other mafia killer had done. He liked to save the mementos of his victims, like jewelry and things like that. Now, in the case of Phyllis, now this is fucked.
Yeah, as we said, he dismembered the bodies and
did
whatever with the heads, but
yeah,
he kept hers.
Yeah, he kept hers in his freezer, dude. So that's definitely like Ed Gein level shit.
Yeah. Dude.
So he's not just like a mafia hitman. This dude is straight up a serial killer.
So when he dismembered the body, freaking Ganji was there.
Right.
In the room.
Right. He wanted him to do it and he couldn't.
And he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So he's doing the whole thing and then he calls him in there to see it. In the middle of it.
Yeah.
And apparently the head was sitting there like just looking with one eye closed and one eye open and shit, like fucking like staring with one eye.
Yeah.
Like
he said it really fucks with him big time.
Yeah.
Like
so
even now
fucked,
it still
dude.
Fucks with him.
And the whole reason and the thing how Tommy killed what's your fucking name, Phyllis?
Yeah.
Fucking is because he was already at the place. Tommy called the house for a total different reason.
Right.
And
he told him that she was there.
Yeah,
he was
Frank's
afraid.
Just like freaked out. He already fucking knows I'm fucking here, dude.
Right.
Like, I can't fucking lie to him. So he tells him,
Phyllis
is here.
So
and
he shows
straight
up
like, keep her fucking there. He shows up,
bam.
Comes and shoots her.
Yep. Done. Oh, yeah. It was quick and simple. It wasn't a big drawn
sleeping.
Out thing.
Yeah, she was sleeping. Just shot her.
Yep. Yep. And then that's when they went to the bathtub.
Yeah.
So that was
bathtub time.
The final, final thing. But Ganji was definitely, like you said, part of it. Now, like you had mentioned earlier, Chris, the site that they used to dispose of the bodies was definitely ingenious.
It was a great fucking idea,
It was the William T. Davis Wildlife Refuge in Staten Island, which is, of course, in New York.
And the state-run park. Nobody's going to live there.
Yeah, nobody's going to build there. Nobody's going to knock shit down, trees and stuff.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Perfect for, burying bodies that nobody's going to fuck
area.
With.
You can go deep in the woods and find a spot. Right. And he did good. He dug deep and then he did good at covering the site.
Yeah.
Like,
he did not, he made sure they went at least six. They said sometimes even seven or eight.
He said he went deeper so cadaver dogs, it wasn't so easy for cadaver dogs to fucking sniff them out.
Yeah. I mean, he was very smart about it. Like I said, the dude was just a criminal genius. He tells the FBI, Ganji tells the FBI a lot of damning things that definitely implicate Tommy, in the drug operation.
You remember how Ganji initially got busted, right?
What was that? I know
he ran a red light and got pulled over.
That's right.
And he had been drinking.
Right.
So like he's in jail and his conscious just got to him. He's like, I need to, what was that detective's name? I can't remember the detective's name, but he's like, I need to speak to a detective, certain detective. Nobody cared. And then he's like, it's about Tom and Patera. They're like, oh, it's on.
Right.
But yeah, he initially got busted because he ran a red light.
That's fucked.
Yeah.
That's so fucked.
All the
up.
Shit you go through.
Right. Yeah, that's fucking crazy, man. But like you said, he confessed. He told him everything, told him about the drug operation. It says that they sold over 200 in a year, 220 pounds of cocaine, many kilos of heroin, and hundreds of pounds of pot.
Per year.
And leaving a total of 60 dead bodies in the nature preserve. So pretty brutal stuff. Ganji takes the FBI there, and it took him a while because he's like, I was here in the dark.
In the dark, yeah.
I don't know exactly. Like you said, Chris, it's very heavily wooded.
Yeah.
Remote. There's no like bearing, like, oh, there's a Walgreens on the corner, you know.
And like you said, it was dark when they were out there burying the fucking bodies. So like, he's like, I know it was this area. So they went through an entire day, didn't find nothing.
Right.
And then the second day they went hours, and then finally somebody hit a briefcase or whatever that had like a leg and a torso in it or some shit.
Right. That's when they started finding the suitcases, and then it was on.
It was like, oh, this is the spot. Okay.
This is it. And so then, it was a huge excavation, and they found...
They found 19...
Yeah. I don't know where the 60 number comes in. It's always approximate with these things.
It always is with the killers.
But like you said, they found like 19 or 20 of them.
Yeah, and they couldn't prosecute for one because the head was missing.
Right. So, yeah, he was definitely, it was an operation. Now, in Tommy's Brooklyn apartment, agents found more than 60 automatic weapons. Swords, knives, and a variety of books, such as the Hitman's Handbook. That sounds like a fun, like, table book, you know, coffee table.
I mean, I think it would sit right there, the Butcherman's Handbook and the Anarchist Cookbook right next to
that
each
would be
other,
nice.
Right?
Yeah,
that would make
companion
sense, right?
Piece. Yeah. Exactly. Also, books on butchering. And this is a nice one here, Kill or Be Killed, a book that details executions, torture, and murder. Sounds like something maybe we might want to read.
Actually, I might actually want to check that out.
I might
out.
Amazon that shit tonight. I don't know. That sounds interesting. He was indicted in 1990 for drug dealing and his involvement with the 7 murders, though. He refused to testify against anyone. He was totally...
No, when he got locked up, he's like, I ain't no fucking rat, dude.
Yep, don't even ask. I'm not saying shit.
A rat
and he could have got
rat
out of stuff,
he,
you know, reduced his sentence, but no. He said, fuck that, and he refused to do it. And he actually mocked the prosecutor and said, there's no way the jury, I think he quoted, wouldn't have the balls to kill me. So
that's a fucking guy with some fucking balls.
Big time. Yeah, Tommy was fucking tough, man. He was a badass. Now, in June of 92, he's found guilty, obviously.
Yeah.
Mostly due to the Frank Ganji stuff, testifying just too much, you know, mountains of evidence from raiding his Gravesend apartment, you know.
I think he pled guilty, I think.
That I
not
don't
100%
know.
Off
I him. Don't even know.
I get all these guys so confused.
It
in
is
my
very
head.
Confusing,
like,
so I understand.
Who was it? But yeah, he did get convicted on 18, but. The reason I'm pretty sure the reason they got 19 bodies when they went to the woods is the Lila, they couldn't find her head, but her body was there, so they couldn't prove it was her
because
decomposition or something. I'm pretty sure I read that.
Yeah, plus the technology wouldn't have been like it is now.
Yeah, for sure.
Know,
it was
get
like
so much
mid-80s.
Right. So, I mean, they find him guilty. You know, all that stuff they found and, they give him, they don't give him the death penalty. So, I mean, he mocks it and he's right. They gave him life. And I think I read where it said something like that they couldn't directly like prove like forensically or anything that he actually did kill the people, but they knew he was like right there and involved.
Yeah.
So that was the only reason they didn't give him death, was that they couldn't prove that he was the one that actually killed them. But obviously the dismembering and all that they knew.
He 100% did. Yeah. He at least did something with the body after death.
Right. So, I mean, it was, you know, whatever. What the fuck? We talked last week, you know, about the Avery case and my change of heart on the death penalty.
Right.
I think, fuck it. Let these fucking guys rot in there, because I don't think the state, I mean, if they can't, you know, send out fucking, you know, your driver's license information correctly or do anything like that, then, you know, do they fucking, you know, have the right to fucking, you know, pull the lever on somebody? I'm just doubting the capability there.
I got you.
It's a competency thing with me. And like we talked last week. So I think, fuck it, whatever. Give him fucking life. He's there. He ain't going anywhere. And he smiles upon his sentence and actually gave a thumbs up to the reporters in court. So he's a cocky motherfucker.
Looking like Varg after his sentence.
Varg. Yeah, I mean, he's just the total fucking, you know, fuck you, you know, whatever, motherfucker. You know, he's just very, very taunting. And Ganji gets a 10-year sentence for his involvement. He's out now. He's done many interviews, but they're all like, you know, where he's like blacked out, where you can't really see him. But there is a picture of him or two in the book that I read, The Butcher, which is fantastic. If you're interested, Philip Carlo writes a lot of books like that.
That's the Iceman book.
Yes, he did. He's written a bunch of them. They're fantastic. So, yeah, he winds up getting 10 years, Ganji does. He regrets testifying. He wishes he could have just been killed. He wishes he would have been whacked back
then. I don't want this in my life anyway.
No, he's haunted by, like you said, the head of Phyllis in the fucking bathroom.
He watched the lady that he had been romantically involved with, a.k.a. fucking her. But watched her fucking get killed and decapitated, all because he made that phone call.
Right.
Or answered that phone call.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, dude, it's fucked
up. That haunt the fuck out of me too.
Yeah. I mean, it just fucks with him. And that's what he says is, I wish I would have been killed back then. Just, he's miserable. Now, Tommy is at the McCreary Federal Prison in Pine Knot, Kentucky. In 2015, he was implicated, though, in a savage assault on another inmate who was beaten severely in the face with a metal object. They never found the object, but
they also never got who actually did it either.
Right.
He was implicated.
Right. And the dude, of course, that got beat up was not about to say Tommy Patera did it. So
no, because he's going to die.
Right. So it's like, yeah, I fell down the stairs, or I fell, you know, whatever.
Right, right.
Fell off a ladder.
An old whack whack.
Yeah, dude, and whack whack. He's doing time. Now, this is so funny.
This is so good,
when
I
read
this. I love it.
He's doing time at the federal joint in Danbury, Connecticut.
CK. Go see what's up.
He's there until 2023, CK. So you need to go find Bruno in Delicato at the Danbury Federal Prison.
How fucking awesome it would be if one day, like, get a fucking text from there, hey, I got an interview with Bruno.
Dude, the next time I go out there, I am really going to try to see if I can go visit him.
I got that whack whack interview, bro.
Dude, it'd be so fucking awesome.
That'd be great.
That would be fantastic.
Hell yeah.
So we'll see. He may just be like, fuck you. You guys are really dumb. You know, I don't know.
He'd probably say that to me, but he'd be like, well, you're Italian, fuck it.
Yeah, he might see the last name and be like, hey, come on in, motherfucker.
You want to join Paisan. My crew?
Paisan. You want a cannoli? Huh?
Yeah, you want to join my crew?
Yeah, for sure.
No, I don't want to be in prison, sir.
Yeah, really, no. Thanks, Whack Whack. So that's just funny coincidence. There were a few good documentaries I watched on Tommy. You can easily find them on YouTube.
Yeah, I watched few of them, actually.
Yeah, they're really good. Some interviews you can find with Frank Ganji. There's actually a good podcast I stumbled on. If you like the mobster thing, this dude's pretty, like, wacky.
Mob Talk Radio?
Yeah.
Dude, I listen, dude, like, not just Tommy Karate.
Oh,
I,
yeah.
He's fucking good, dude.
He's really into it. He knows all about the cases and what's going on.
He know
appeals.
No, Mob Talk Radio, check that motherfucker out. He's good.
He is good. I listened to that episode, but I really liked it. It's out of Brooklyn. He gets into all these topics, and he does have a show on Tommy Karate, among many others. But he's all mobsters all the time, but he's really, really good at the way he does it.
Oh, yeah.
Very entertaining. He's a good speaker.
That's earlier when I was like, a rat is a rat is a rat. That's where I got that from.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's true. He hates fucking rats, yeah, he's man. Like, he talks about that shit.
He's like, yeah, you might have done some fucked up shit, but don't fucking talk, man.
Right. And he's all about, you know, the Tommy Karate thing, that Tommy didn't say shit. He was all about it.
Exactly.
Now, the book, The Butcher, as I mentioned, from Philip Carlo, fantastic. The host of Mob Talk Radio does refer to it, but he does make references that things are not conjecture, not totally backed up by fact, but a lot of that stuff's going to be that way.
I mean,
it's not like
book.
These people are keeping like diaries of shit they did, you know? So,
right.
And as we just found, just from doing this story, this short version of it, there's so many people involved that it gets cloudy.
Like what happens? Yeah,
and
exactly.
And it would be tough to get through it. So whatever, that's what he was saying on there. But it wasn't like he was down on it. He was just saying that there were some parts that were more conjecture and he couldn't say they were factual.
That's exactly what he
said. And that's all.
Yeah, that's all.
Now, the author, Philip Carlo, was from the same area. He's passed now. He had ALS. It was really sad. The last book he wrote, I just bought it a couple months ago. He actually had to verbally do with his daughter, I think. He couldn't write anymore, which was really sad. But he's written a lot of really good books on the mafia. There's one dude that we might have to do his nickname, Gas Pipe. So Gas Pipe would be a good one,
right?
To do pretty
Gas
brutal.
Gas Pipe's a freaking crazy name.
Yeah, that's his.
That's
fucking nickname.
Crazy.
So we'll maybe chat about him. But Philip Carlo wrote a book about him.
I got a piss, dude.
All right, so don't miss the next episode. We'll be doing On Murder. Featuring Pee-wee Gaskins.
Pee-wee Gaskins!
Crazy motherfucker from South Carolina that killed, they believe, over 100 victims and disposed of most of them in the swamps as gator food. So he was one of the most depraved bastards, and it'll definitely be a good one. So as Mr. Chris Shawback pees in the background, I'm going to sign off the murder segment, and we're going to get our fucking metal on. I think I hear the train whistle blowing in Danbury, Connecticut. It must be our buddy C. High on fire. My God.
Yes. Thank you, CK.
Yeah. CK on the phone, on Skype, talking to us. And CK, you nailed that shit big time with the reference.
Told you guys to check it out.
You did. And I did. And Shawback
did. I was jamming it all day yesterday.
Jamming the fuck out of it. I've been going crazy with it. I love the new one, Electric Messiah, which was that track we played, the title track. But the whole album shreds, and then I've been listening to Snakes for the Divine. I've been listening to a mix of the other ones, and they're all good. I haven't heard a bad one yet.
No, it's been fucking pretty
all seven, killer. Eight albums, seven or eight. They're all good. There's not one bad one. They're all fucking awesome.
Yeah, those guys are great. So good call. But this time, CK, since we're doing a New York, you know,
East Coast
Long Island,
shit.
Staten Island guy. You thought at least that we should do a band from that area. So what do you got for us this time, buddy?
One of the first couple of bands in this genre kind of defined this genre, I think. It's a band called Dream Theater. Right. I'm sure most people have heard of them. Strangely enough, they didn't get together in New York. The core of the band, which was Portnoy, Mike Portnoy, John Petrucci, and goddamn, what's the fucking and John Myung, they got together at Berkeley in Massachusetts, going to college.
All right.
So they were going to Berkeley for music, obviously. Started jamming between classes, formed a band that would be originally called Majesty. Found a keyboardist named Kevin Moore, who was also originally from New York. And they had this singer, Chris Collins, who was with him for a little while, didn't really cut it. Went to search for a singer. They found a singer named Charlie Dominici. Now, he was a little bit older than these guys. He was a kind of a seasoned veteran. He did a session work. Was in a band, I believe, called Frankie and the Knockouts in the late 70s, early 80s. So that was the first major incarnation of the band. Eventually, they found out that the name Majesty was already taken. And they came up with the name Dream Theater, which was Mike Portnoy's dad came up with it. And that's the name that stuck, and that's the name that they go by to this day. Now, they originally were signed to Mechanic Records in 87 and or 88. Eventually put out the first album, When Dream and Day Unite, in 89. It was a great band. It was a great album. And at that time, there wasn't really a progressive metal movement at the time.
Right.
Fate's Warning. People attach progressive metal with Fate's Warning and Queensryche.
Right.
So along with Dream Theater, at that time, they were considered like the major three or the first three bands of that genre. And obviously, Dream Theater has taken that genre to a new level along with Fate's Warning.
Oh,
Queensryche, we already discussed. So they put up When Dream and Day Unite. Unfortunately, Mechanic Records really didn't give them the push that they are expected or were promised.
So they lacked touring.
Yeah.
They lacked on advertising and all that and touring and everything.
Yeah. They were promised when they signed it, they would get this tour support and all this.
And they didn't get the support that they were promised.
It never came. And all they were really able to tour was like the tri-state area of New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, around that area. So they weren't really... didn't have the funds to do any major tours or so I mean the album did okay and it was a good solid album. During the first couple months of after the album came out and they were playing live, they came to the conclusion that Charlie Dominici was not the person for the job as singer. They saw limitations in his voice of what they wanted to do in the future. So they kind of got rid of him. They went through, at that time, it was 89 to 92. You didn't really hear too much from him.
Right. You heard I know a little bit about this part of the story, which is, I think when I was still out there, was I remember, being at John Arch's house, John Arch, of course, of Fate's Warning. And John was playing me a demo of a band. And I think, you know, because I never remembered their name. And now that you say it was Majesty, I know it was Dream Theater, but at the time they weren't called it. So it must have been when they were still Majesty. But he played me a demo tape of them playing instrumental with no singer. And he said that they were doing the tryout. And so he was, wanting to... try out for the band, and there were other people that were trying out as well, and he was letting me check it out, and I thought they were really badass. They sounded to me a lot like Rush, and he actually said, and which is funny because I do know that the bass player, that John Myung, they met him like you said at Berkeley, So I don't know why they would have been interested in looking at bass players too, because John was saying, hey, you know, if you want to check this out and maybe you could go, you know, we could go to the tryout together, you know? And I was like, well, you know, I was still playing in my other band. So I was like, no, I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing. And I thought, you know, the band was wicked, but, you know, it really wasn't my thing, you know? And then of course, you know, years later, to hear, you know, that they became Dream Theater, just kind of funny because I thought they were good and everything, but certainly not really my bag. But, for me at the time, especially that demo was a little bit different than what you hear, you know, when they became popular. So, I just thought that was funny because you were saying they were kind of laying low and they were between singers. And I remember when John got the invite, he wound up, of course, not getting the job, which could you imagine Arch singing in Dream Theater?
He actually did. He, cause when I was, when he called me that time when I was sick,
right.
We were talking about that. He said he didn't want to, cause he had a family and all that. And he said, I wasn't up to touring. He goes, I had other commitments. I had to think about my family.
Right.
And you know, so me going out on tour with a band that's up and well, even though they had the one M out, but they weren't, you know, they weren't making any money.
Right.
He goes, it makes sense to me to, you know, put my family in that position, but that would have been fucking wicked to hear it.
Oh, Jesus.
There's actually, I believe there's, on YouTube or somewhere, I heard demos of him sing some of the songs, Images and Words.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember where I saw it.
That would be cool.
I can't remember where I heard it. But there is some stuff out in the internet with him singing some of these demos.
Yeah, Arch is amazing. But, yeah, so that's a cool thing. But I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just knew that was cool story.
No, I was going to bring that up anyway, and I knew you had a little connection with that too. So
nice.
But eventually they found James LeBrison in the tape, and you know, they tried him out, and he was the man for the job, and he's still the singer to this day, and he's got an incredible voice, and he fits them to the T. And you know, they put out the second album, Images and Words, which I think is phenomenal, and you know, that's like a if you're a progressive metal fan, that's an album you need in your collection. That's a must have album.
I agree.
And even, you know, and even funny enough, it got some radio play on FM stations. You know, Pull Me Under actually, they had an edit version of it and actually did okay on radio at the time, which is weird, you know, 92. Oh, yeah.
Well, it's got a good hook to it though. Yeah. I mean, it's got a good hook to it. And if you shortened it up a little bit, like you said, it would be very playable on, like you said, a rock station. You could deal with it.
You know, so them, they left Mechanic Records and signed to East West Records at the time, which was a subsidiary of Elektra. And they pushed them, gave them good tours to go on, and you know, and they pushed them, and that album did really well. And you know, to capitalize on the momentum, they went right back to the studio, recorded Awake, which is another phenomenal album, another masterpiece in my opinion.
Yeah.
And you know, and it just got bigger. And bigger. I mean, as big as you could be for that genre of metal. You know, they're not going to be fucking doing stadiums or anything, but
right,
you know,
right,
they're doing okay for themselves. You know.
Oh sure.
And the thing with them, even though you know they're so prolific, they were doing albums every 2 to 3 years at this time, and to do that, you know, that's a lot. You know, and Awake in 94, then 97 they did Falling Into Infinity, 99 they did Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from a Memory, which is another phenomenal album. It's a concept album, it's a great story, you need to check it out. And 2002 they did probably one of my favorite albums by them, Six Degrees of Inner Turbulence. It's a double album. The first disc is a collection of like 5-6 songs. The second disc is one continuous song, and it's just phenomenal.
The second disc is one song?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 46 minutes, 50 minutes, but it's broke up into parts.
Yeah, that's like Pleasant Shade of Grey, Fate's Warning. Yeah. One album is the one song. It's just one.
That's crazy.
But they break it up into parts, but it's one song. Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, and there's still, and for this time, it's still a major label. It's saying a lot. You know, this is 2002, 2003, they put out Train of Thought, another great album. 2005, Octavarium, which was the last album they did for Elektra Records at that time. The contract ran out. They decided to go somewhere else, so they signed with Roadrunner. And they released Systematic Chaos, which is just a masterpiece as far as progressive metal. The first album for a new label, they fucking killed it.
That's cool. Fuck yeah.
And then 2009, which was the last album, unfortunately, for Mike Portnoy. And as nobody knows, I am like the hugest Mike Portnoy fan in the world, probably.
You are.
I think this guy is the shit. He could put an album of him just farting on his drums, and I'd probably buy it.
Is that a fucking goddamn Airheads reference?
Oh yeah, that is, isn't it?
That's a straight up Airheads reference, shit. Bro. I ain't farting on no snare drum.
Oh shit!
Nice.
That's awesome. I didn't even know I did that. I'm fucking good. I'm damn good.
Hell yeah! Damn. Fuck yeah!
You
dude.
Are cocky today.
You know, and at that time, you know, when Mike Portnoy thought, you know, they should take a little break, you know, because they're putting out albums every 2 to 3 years. So he didn't want them to get stale. He's like, we should take some time off, do other things. And at this time, all the band members, this is probably the one band where the band has so many side projects that are always doing something.
Right.
I mean, at this time, Mike Portnoy had like four different bands going at one time. John Myung had a couple different side projects going with members of King's X and Galactic Cowboys. James LeBrie had his Mo Mosler albums going out with his side project. So this band is, even between that, is always working. And you know, Portnoy wanted to take a break. He wanted to take a hiatus. They said no. And unfortunately, Mike left. And to me, he was the heartbeat of the band. Not only was he the drummer, he was also a major writer in most of the songs.
Right.
You know, his father came up with the name of the with the band. He was the spokesperson for the band. He did most interviews for the band. He was, you know, he was just always out there, and that's just the way he was. And when he left, took away the heartbeat of the band. And I still love these guys even now. You know, they got another great drummer, and nothing against Mike Mangini, who's a drummer now.
Yeah, he's badass.
He's badass. And the funny thing is, when I heard the name, I remember hearing, and I thought to myself, wasn't he the drummer for Cream at one point? I'm like, it can't be the same fucking guy.
For Cream?
Extreme.
Oh, extreme. Okay, yeah, you cut out a little bit there. Okay.
Yeah, from you know, fucking More Than Words, whatever that song
was.
Yeah.
No. Yeah,
he not for that album, but he replaced the original drummer for an album.
For Extreme. Okay, oh,
that's
right.
And, you know, and I'm like, it can't be the same fucking guy. And it was, and this guy, when I heard him, he's phenomenal. He is phenomenal.
And with that name, he fits in with the Tommy Karate crew.
Italian shit, bro.
The Italian thing.
Yeah,
Italian
dude,
shit.
It's fucking all over the place this episode.
Hell yeah.
So I think I need to make some garlic bread or something, man.
I made eggplant
parmesan on
I saw that.
Yeah,
that looked good.
Fucking
dude.
Good shit.
Yeah, I saw that. That looked fucking good.
Well, I was reading all these Tommy Karate books and stuff, and I was like, fuck, I need to make some Italian.
Make some Italian food. Hell yeah,
so,
dude.
It's in my blood, literally. So that's funny. So
hell yeah.
But the last album they put out with him was Black Clouds and Black Clouds and Silver Linings, 2009, and 2011 they came back with a dramatic turn of events. You know, the first album with Mike Mangini, and then this time it was pretty much the same band. The only couple of the Kevin Moore left at some point in the early 90s. They had another keyboard player, Derek Sherinian. He was a great player, and now they have Jordan Rudess, who's been with the band for a while. So it's been pretty much the same core up until that point.
Right.
Like I said, you know, they put out Dramatic Turn of Events. I like the album, but it I don't know if it's because I'm just a huge Mike Portnoy fan or, but it just
you might be kind of biased a little bit, man.
Right?
But still,
right.
No.
It's still good cool, though, music, and it's man. Good to know they're still out there, even though it might not be the version that you totally dig. Is there anything else on Dream Theater you wanted to hit, CK?
No. After 2011, they came up with the self-titled album, 2016, a double album called The Astonishing. February 22nd, I believe, they're coming out with an album called Distance Over Time. I've heard some clips from it.
So they're coming out a new one?
It's fucking heavy as fuck.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Hell yeah.
I heard a couple tunes, and it's heavy, and I'm actually looking forward to it. I already pre-ordered it. Shocking.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Wait, hold on.
CD and vinyl?
I was just going to ask. One media?
Oh, my God.
I was just going to ask. One media or multiple media?
There was a motherfucker getting all Dreams here on vinyl, let me tell you.
Oh, Jesus.
That's fucking crazy.
The first album they come out with, wasn't issued on vinyl until a couple months ago.
Oh, wow.
It was a motherfucker getting all these on vinyl.
Oh, man. I'm glad you were able to succeed, though.
Hey. I also want to say it's nice to talk to you and actually be able to see you at this
same
time.
Yeah, we get CCK here keeping the Posergeists away. So far, so good here. There was a local event, Chris, that you were at last night.
Yeah, it's
New Year's Eve bash over at
New
Pete's
Year's
Joint.
Party over at the Chalk Establishment, we will call it.
Yeah, the guys in Chalk have a new place they jam at now.
And it's pretty legit, dude. And so last night being New Year's Eve, today being New Year's Day, they played, they got four songs they have done. So they played four songs. That was it. They opened up everything. And I want to tell you, the way Chalk sounds now with the Meister and Mike joining, like, I want to thank the Chalk family for fucking having the party, but the way they sound is fucking amazing, dude.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking it out. I was invited, but I had prior engagements.
That happens, man.
But yeah, Pete and the guys, we always wish him the best, so I'm sure I'll be over there before long.
Well, they're legit working on recording right now.
Great.
And they said last night when they did the four-song bit that this is all you get until the EP is done. We're working on it. We're getting it done.
Nice. While you were there, just as an aside, did Meister say that he loved me and he missed me or anything?
He kind of wondered why you haven't been calling him a homo lately.
Oh, damn.
But yeah.
Meister's the shit. All those guys are cool. Yeah, that's really awesome to hear. It was a good time,
though. And also Blood Feud from Pontiac.
Fuck yeah.
And they killed it, dude. Like,
oh, yeah.
They killed it. And Gormonger played it. It was a good night. Just all kinds of people all night fucking long, dude.
Nice.
Just having a good time.
Nice.
Drinking some beers.
Right. Whiskey, maybe.
There was no whiskey. I didn't shave my head.
Yeah, there's pictures of this motherfucker on Facebook with his head being shaved. And I said,
you shaved your head.
Yeah, that's totally what I shaved.
At like 3 o'clock in the morning, they were shaving his head.
Yeah, that happened. It was fun, though.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So he looks all styling now with his new bald dome, and he's trying to be cool like me and be bald. You know?
Shave the head off. Hey, I don't got the goatee. I got the bird.
You do. So that's cool. Anything else on that front? You wanted to mention,
dude, as far as that, got to hang out with some good people. It was a good New Year's. How was your New Year's?
My New Year's was good, kind of quiet, you know, just had some dinner and just chilled, watched a little Netflix and just relaxed, you know, tried to keep off. Yeah.
How was your New Year's, CK, since you're on the phone?
I worked. I had to work last night.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God, for real?
I thought you might have been playing volleyball with the Ecuadorians down the street or Ethiopians.
That season's done.
Yeah, well, nah. You can bring it back, dude.
The Outdoor Ecuadorian League is done for the year.
The Outdoor Ecuadorian League.
Ecuadorian League.
He thinks we're kidding, man. It's like
fucking serious.
Ridiculous.
That term is hilarious.
The restaurants and shit. We were driving down Main Street. It's like all these Ethiopian restaurants and it's like
Danbury is like a lot of Ecuadorian and Colombian and these guys down these tournaments for volleyball. They have a whole like little stadium set up in the back of the house. And they were selling food and shit, and they got shut down for that. But
right?
No, this shit is—they're serious.
Yeah, oh yeah, they're not fucking around.
That shit's fucking crazy.
That's hilarious, dude. So you had to work. Well, that sucks. But
I was home. I was home by 9:30, quarter of 10. Oh, that's so me and Laura, you know, we hung out.
That's
watched
cool.
The ball drop. Yay!
Yeah, right.
You know,
it's all good.
Fell asleep.
Right. Well, we're looking forward.
I was off today, so it's all good.
Nice. Well, we're all looking forward to a good 2019. We did a, you and I, CK, we did a short bonus episode for the future.
This afternoon.
We did it as kind of a test. We're having some audio issues trying to work through it. And so we did one just to test the waters, and we did it on the best metal of all time list. So. it's a good one, so that should be fun to unleash in the future.
And I'm trying to get you to do this one story for the mayhem section.
And you're really close. I need to fill.
You gotta add names or change names or whatever.
That's the problem. Is I don't know if I could tell it. I mean, I can, but it's just not gonna be the same without this name.
Nice,
but that
nice.
I think I could work through that. If I could get over that, I think I figured out how to do it.
I think you've told me about this before. Probably.
Yeah, this would be a multi. It would be broken up over like several episodes.
Right.
Fucking epic, and I don't use that word lightly. This would be the story of stories. These stories are really fucking funny, but the person involved in it is.
You can't. Yeah, you got to be nice, man.
It's fucking brutal.
You
got to
be PC.
Yeah.
I was home. I think I was home Friday, and I was just sitting. I was sitting watching TV or something. I just thought about the story and I just started fucking laughing. I texted Peter. I go, "You gotta fucking do this, dude. You gotta fucking tell the story on the podcast."
Oh,
this guy said it's gotta be told. Oh, it needs to be out there.
I just started fucking laughing.
I know, dude. It's good stuff.
Hey,
so
man, I got one that I want to tell, but at the same time, I don't because it's pretty brutal. Because the V-twin.
Oh.
So we'll think about that here, but I think we're pretty close to actually pulling that off. But if we don't have any more metal to discuss, guys, always good to do this live like this. This is awesome.
Is.
And CK, always good to talk.
I just want to put one more thing out for June Theater.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you get a chance, they have these called a bootleg series, and they've done albums by like they do full albums, like they redid Master of Puppets live,
Dream Theater did
Number of the Beast live.
Oh my God!
Hold on, Dream
Dark
Theater
Side of the
did
Moon
that?
They did live, and Deep Purple's Man in Japan. If you get a hold of these four albums, they're still kicking around. They had a bootleg series that they sold on our website. I don't know if it's still available, but you can get them used or through Amazon one of the vendors. If you get a chance,
dude, that's fucking awesome,
it's good
man.
Stuff.
That's cool. That's cool.
You know,
well, always a good morsel of information, CK, and good to talk to you, my friend. So thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Next week, continue.
Yep.
Tearing it the fuck up.
Got some good shit next week.
Hey. Hold on.
Going a little bit different direction.
Before you go away, are you going to go to the prison and see Whack Whack?
Oh, yeah. You don't know this, but Whack Whack from the Tommy Karate part of the show. You know where he
is? Don't tell
me
he's in Danbury.
He's in Danbury.
He is. Oh, he's totally
no
in
shit.
Danbury.
Yeah. And the next time I come home, I'm going to try to go see him. You'll come with
yeah,
me.
Dude.
Yeah,
dude.
I'll bring you with me. We'll go see Whack Whack. He's there till 2023, dude.
Dude.
Yeah, I'm going to write to him. I'm going to write to him and see if I can get him to answer me. And if I can, then we'll see if we can arrange a
visit.
That's
okay. Awesome. So awesome,
yeah,
dude.
Whack,
that's
whack.
Just like 2 miles from my house.
I know. And yeah. We can't call him Whack Whack, though. I think he probably would like
yeah,
that.
He probably would like
we'll
that.
We'll just call him Bruno. I think that'd be all right. So
we could pull out our
awesome.
Dicks and be like, hey, Whack Whack.
Mr. Indelicato instead. So, yeah, that's hilarious. We were reading that in the story. Thought that was funny. So, all right, bud.
That'd be fucking great.
Well, we'll talk to you next week. You're doing something different next week, you said?
Yep. We're going to turn the tables, do something a little bit more aggressive. We're going to do a band from Connecticut, Hatebreed.
Nice. Hatebreed.
Hatebreed.
Connecticut band.
Now is the time.
Yeah, fucking, I've seen them live. They fucking kill it. But, dude, that'll be good. That'll be good.
Yeah, I can't wait for Hatebreed, dude.
All right, brother. Well, we'll talk to you then. And until then, buddy, you be good.
Talk to you next week, bro.
You too. Happy New Year's.
Fuck yeah, that's Dream Theater the way I dig them, the heavier stuff, heavy, nice bassy, fucking low end.
Yeah,
and killer.
That guitar
pull me under.
Is like, jing. I love
yeah,
it, dude.
I really dig it. That was always good to talk to CK doing some Dream Theater this time around, since we're talking Tommy Karate and New York and all that good stuff.
East Coast.
Big time. Now, we fucked up. We admitted it last week.
Yeah. We kind of really fucked up.
We did. We, as my drill sergeant said, we fucked the baby.
We fucked the baby.
You
fucked the baby,
Altieri.
You
goddamn fucked the baby, son.
You fucked the baby.
You goddamn fucked the baby, son. And that's a disturbing analogy. However, we fucked up. We did not do Killer Cage Match last week.
Even
we had a
after
lot of audio.
We mentioned the...
Oh,
fighters.
My God. It was a nightmare. So we've already announced the fighters. We're doing a tag team. Those of you that don't know what Killer Cage Match is, if you're a new listener, we have our listeners on Facebook post two numbers one and 55. And we have a list that we came up with of killers,
cult leaders, shit
yeah,
like that.
Just all fucked up
like
people.
Just fucked up true crime.
Yeah.
People that are high in the archy.
All sorts of them. And then we have 55 objects, and we have the two killers fight in a cage with the two objects, and we have some fun talking about who's going to win, you know, or what are they going to do with the objects.
Yeah, it depends.
Some of
the
objects,
exactly, yeah.
As you could only imagine, are a little disturbing. You know,
one of them tonight is.
Yeah,
Jesus
one of them tonight is pretty gross. So, so we're doing a tag team match since we fucked up last week, and so we got four of them. So we've got one team. Is which one?
The team one team is from last week that we failed to mention them fighting
right.
each other. They
so now they're teaming
they did
up.
Some WWE shit, and they fucking came together.
Nice.
Like, oh, now we're going to be a team. We were rivals. Now we're going to be a team. So
right.
We got Albert Fish and Lizzie Borden, the Gray Man and the Hatchet Murderer, bitch.
Yeah. Now we've got to, because we're assuming that most people listening to us are going to know who Albert Fish and Lizzie Borden are. But, you know, Albert Fish was a very small, kind of wiry dude. He was an older guy.
He's old, dude. Yeah.
And
yeah.
he was all about like preying on kids and fucking cannibalizing
and putting
them.
Needles in his skin. That dude like was weird as fuck, man.
Yeah, he had like, you know, what was it, like 60 pins in his scrotum or something when they fucking killed. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I don't even want to know about awful. That kind of fucking so, pleasure.
So and we then, got that then, motherfucker.
And then what's the other tag team, bro? What's the other tag team?
The other team is Richard Chase.
Oh, my God.
And O.J. Simpson, which is a fucked up combination.
That is so fucked up.
Because man. Richard Chase is
no,
what?
No, he's pretty much a vampire. He just fucking, he just like killed people and drank their blood. Like he drank animal blood because he thought he wasn't getting enough of it.
Right. And he was just really wacky and weird and.
And then OJ,
oh, he, dude.
He allegedly
right.
killed his wife and her lover, and right. there was blood everywhere. So
oh, yeah.
Chase would have been like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. So a good guy he teamed up with.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as OJ keeps his hands off of him, he's all right. So yeah, that's right, quite, right, the, right. quite exactly. the tag teams going at it.
And then we got, they're fighting. As far as the weapons or objects that
yeah, we've got some good ones. Four of them.
Electric drill.
Assuming there's a drop cord, so they've got
yeah.
access.
And I like or the cordless. I like the way you say that. It can't be cordless. It's electric.
Right.
It can't be cordless.
Right.
Cordless drill is different because right. you can move all over the stadium. Right.
Right. right.
And then what? A leather-bound Bible.
Yeah.
Like.
I don't know, you could beat somebody with that shit. I mean, if it's big enough, I don't know. I don't specify the size, but we're going to figure like a phone book, like a pretty nice size fucking with a little girth Bible that you could probably beat the piss out of somebody with if you wanted to. This one is a funny one that was on the original list.
The
can of corn.
The can of corn. And that's my
it's
favorite
just so
one.
Simple, man.
No, it's my favorite one just because of that damn fucking goddamn Adam Sandler movie. Fucking the reboot of The Longest Yard. Because the dude on there, he's like, he gets hurt. And he's like, can of corn and I'll be all right. I'm like, dude, what the fuck does that even mean? And when you put can of corn on the goddamn list, I'm like, yep, that's in my head. Can of corn and I'll be all right.
So, and you could fuck somebody up with a can of corn,
no, you throw
dude.
It at their fucking head. You're
or
gonna
you
fucking,
could use it to fucking like
beat their face.
Tommy Karate style in the
yeah,
joint.
Definitely.
Like, fuck
definitely.
Them up. And then this one, the last one is pretty fucking disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
The metal thermos, but what's it filled with?
Oh, man, hot pus. not just pus.
Hot pus.
Not just hot liquid, hot pus.
Yeah, that's
it's
just
very infectious.
Sounds fucking disgusting.
Yeah, it's very infectious.
Just like opening that shit up like would unleash the fucking plague.
I bet
plague,
it smells
man.
Great. You ever, yeah. You ever see that shit where the doctors or the vets are doing some shit and they cut something open and the pus
nasty.
Looks out like, oh, that stinks?
Yeah.
But so it's hot.
It's
Jen's over here about to fucking puke right now, dude.
So what do you think, dude? I mean, you got Fish and Lizzie Borden. I mean, Lizzie Borden's a tough bitch, but she's, you know, not
yeah,
a big woman.
It. No.
She's kind of a petite.
I'm one-sided on this. I'm definitely going with motherfucking OJ
and Chase.
Because yeah. Chase is just going to sit there and be like, give me the blood.
Right.
And OJ's like,
he's just going to go
fucking,
nuts.
NFL, what was he, linebacker?
Running back,
yeah. He's a big old dude.
Yeah.
And I mean, already got away with murder.
Dude, the electric drill with OJ or the fucking can of corn, like some bludgeoning.
Definitely.
And the mug of the thermos of hot pus. I mean, even if you just use the metal.
I think OJ
thermos would be fucked.
I think
up.
OJ'd probably drink the pus for energy.
Oh, you think so?
And then he's gonna be like, "Oh, it's infection." Fucking guy, he'll be like, "Magic got over AIDS. I can get over some hot pus. Fuck it, dude."
I can get over some hot pus.
Fuck it, dude.
So, yeah, I'm with you, dude. I think OJ, I mean, hands down.
I'll take OJ over all three of them. Yeah, no, I'll take OJ over all three of them.
OJ's going to fuck all three of them up.
The juice.
Yeah. So, I think OJ wins.
Yeah, OJ wins.
Chase will just be there in case somebody bleeds.
He's
just going to
be there. Yeah.
If somebody were to bleed, he's got it.
Chase is just there for the blood. He's on it. That's it.
Right. So that's pretty funny. Thank you to DJ Mason, Jake Decker, Maggie Bartosik, and Thomas Owsley for providing the random numbers. So you guys are awesome.
We appreciate that. Thank you guys.
Yeah, so we're sorry we
first ever tag team match. And
yeah,
yes,
that was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
We might
good,
have
but,
to do that again. That
but
was fun.
OJ's just like, that was straight up some WWE shit, though.
Very much. The joining together thing.
We
might have a storyline here. Like maybe fucking Fish is fucking Lizzie Borden. I mean,
oh, shit.
You know what I mean? Or he's Lizzie's probably fucking whipping him because remember he did the.
He loved the pain. He slapped himself on the back with the fucking.
That shit they do. Like they do it somewhere where it's like symbolizing Christ's fucking. You know, like what he went through with the cross and like whipping themselves, flagellation or whatever the fuck they call it.
Flagellation.
They do. It's something like that. Yeah. It's self-flagellation where they're like beating yourself with
whip.
With
a stick. I've seen the ones where they do that shit with the fucking like a big ass blade. Yeah. And they fucking slice their fucking shit open.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, why would you do
that? Oh, I know. These guys are fucked up that do it. There's like a group that does this. Yeah, it's like really fucked
up. It's pretty fucked.
It is. So anyway, I think that was fun. We'll definitely continue doing Killer Cage Match moving forward. Now, we've got usually in the Mayhem segment, we've got a little
story
to tell.
My mind has been stupid, so I haven't had one lately.
Yeah, and that's okay because, you know, we do this every week. So, and I've got a lot of good ones, and so I like sharing them. And I always like to give you a couple of options with these.
Yeah, no, and you did give me a couple options. And this one's been on the table for a while, so I want to hear how you broke your fucking sister's arm. Because that is actually, I want to know, how'd you break your fucking sister's arm, dude?
All right, well, what happened was my sister was very athletic. You know, she was always playing sports with us, you know.
Right.
And she's 4 years younger than me. And at that time, I would have been like average size kid. I wasn't a bigger kid like I am now. I'm still a kid, I guess.
I do eat
popsicles. Like I love sugar free.
This motherfucker,
I eat the fuck out of some popsicles.
I love fucking popsicles.
Me too. Bro. I always have them, but they're sugar free, so it's just like, you know, drinking water. You know. Anyway, so I'm a big kid and at heart, I guess. Anyway, so I'm doing this. You know, we're playing football, and she wants to play. And I'm like, no, it's going to be rough. You know, like you really shouldn't, you know, like we're getting to
taking
the age, getting
sister.
Bigger,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah.
And she's like holding the ball and like running away and like trying to fuck with us, you know, like I let me play, you know, and she's just like taunting. And so I got fucking pissed and I went over to her and I like grabbed her. And I, like, body slammed her into the fucking ground.
Hey, I can't say I've never done that to one of my siblings as right? well. Like,
it just, you get mad, and she was just very taunting.
Sibling fights get intense.
I mean, it was brutal. And so when I slammed her down, she landed on a rock with her arm and broke her arm.
Oh, Jesus.
And at the time, you know, like, I'm not a fucking doctor. So, I mean, like, I'm going to defend myself. As bad as that was, that I'm not like a radiologist, I could not have known that the arm was, it wasn't like compound, like coming through the skin.
Coming out the skin.
It wasn't hanging all distorted. It just hurt. So I just told her to fucking suck it up and go fucking sit down and we were going to play football.
You're my little sister. Stop.
Yeah. So just fucking chill. So she was complaining that her arm hurt. Obviously. And so we just played the game, you know, like she just sat there. And then when we got done, we went home and I told her, I said, look, I said, you can't say anything to mom and dad because I'm going to get in trouble. You know, like they didn't want me hurting my sister, you know.
Of course.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And to my defense, I wasn't trying to hurt her. I was just, she was aggravating me. It's like,
shut the fuck up.
And I was just telling her, yeah, to shut the fuck up. And it was, like you said, a sibling fight. But we did overall get along really well. And we still do.
No, anyway, yeah, that's yeah. great. Yeah, no.
But it was just kind of this fucked up thing. But I told her, don't say anything, you know. So she's sitting there eating supper, and she's, like, eating with her other hand and shit. And, like, it's pretty obvious. Like, it really fucking hurts. There's
something wrong with her.
But, again, it didn't look, like, all purple. It didn't look anything like you would traditionally
like think, a broken like, bone injury. Oh, my God, injury. Like,
that's broken, yeah. You know? So nobody could tell other than she said her arm hurt. We were playing football, you know, nothing out of the ordinary. But she sat there and ate, you know, with her other hand.
And the whole time.
Yeah. And then when we went to bed, her room and my room were side by side, and she was like crying. I mean, it was like really awful. And so the next morning, it was just so bad that we had to tell him, you know, like Dina's, you know, her arm's really hurt. And so my dad took her to the hospital, and yeah, they did.
Turns out it's fucking broken.
Came home with a cast. And
after body slamming your fucking sister, dude.
I felt like shit, dude. Like, you know, like I said, I mean, we were close. I certainly didn't mean to hurt her. Where I think I fucked up, you know, like Nixon, they always say the cover-up is worse than the crime. If I would have just said... It's just
been like, hey, we gotta got to go hurt. Home and got hurt.
We got to check this out.
I get it. I get it.
You know, so dude, it made it worse that she's like eating with the other hand. And then, like, crying at night. It just made me feel like shit.
Dude, like, that kind of sort of the same thing happened with my youngest daughter.
Yeah.
Like, she was riding her bike and lost control, ran into a tree. Well, one of my neighbors walked her back to the house, and she comes back, and she was crying and everything, said her arm hurt. Now, I looked at it, obviously, not a doctor. I looked at it. I was like, can you open your fingers and everything, whatever. She's like, yeah, I'm good. And she could move it around.
Right.
So no problem. I'm like, all right, cool. You just like hit it really hard. You're bruised up a little bit. No big deal.
Right.
Well, she went to school the following day, and the school nurse was like, yeah, her arm's pretty red. You might want to go see a doctor. Took her to the doctor. Her fucking goddamn arms broke.
I'm oh,
like,
damn.
I felt like such a dick, dude.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was very, that's funny. I mean, not funny that it happened, but, you know, I mean, the coincidence.
Yeah,
the scenario, same thing. Like, you know, you don't realize it's not obviously broken.
You know? When you, I mean, moving there, yeah, it hurts a little bit. No big deal, but.
Yeah, so it's always fucked up when that kind of thing happens. And so that's the story of me breaking my sister's arm on a rock. So,
hey,
not really a funny story.
Fuck that rock. Fuck that.
Yeah,
rock.
It's the rock's fault, not me.
Yes,
you know. So, all right. Well, anything to add here in Mayhem before we part ways with them in this segment?
Again, I just want to say, as far as Mayhem, last night was Mayhem, dude. I woke up. I woke up on Pete's floor in his toy, you know, his toy room, like, you know how he's got all his toys displayed.
Yeah, yeah.
I woke up in there, in between two cabinets, like done.
Wow.
Nate passed out in the garage. We turned the heaters off after the show was over. Nate passed out in the garage. He said he woke up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, like, why am I fucking freezing and where the fuck am I at, dude?
Wow.
So damn. Yeah. That was good.
Oh, yeah. And you got your head shaved at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And I shaved my fucking head off.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. So anyway.
Hell yeah.
All right. Well, good Mayhem segment this time. Oh, yeah. Dude.
Caught in the mosh.
Yeah, fucking Anthrax, man. We're keeping with the New York theme, doing some New York bands. And Anthrax is one of my favorites from back in the day. So, for sure.
Fucking fucking Anthrax, fucking old school Anthrax, man.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Now, the bumper music this time around, Dream Theater, High on Fire, Orange Goblin, and Anthrax, of course.
Obviously Anthrax.
Killer, yeah. Killer stuff. All those bands are worth checking out. I've been jamming the fuck out of some High on Fire.
Dude, that High on Fire, dude, I had Jesus. Never heard them before, dude. When I said, listen, it just
jams,
nonstop,
man.
Just I fucking love it.
Really, really good. And Orange Goblin is good too, from the UK. Not quite as heavy as High on Fire, but really cool and unique and definitely worth checking out. Thanks to everybody listening out there. We continue to see Chicago dominate with over 50% of the listeners coming from Chicago.
Chi-town.
So thank you, guys. Thank you.
I'm not going to be a dick, but yep. I ain't going to say what I was going to say. Fuck it.
Well, that's good. The UK and Australia follow the US for the most listens for countries. But thank you guys, all of you, you know, for listening, because it's
everybody
cool
who
as
listens
shit,
is the best, dude.
Yeah, we dig it, and we always love to hear the comments. We got some really good ones this time around. Chris, you want to read the first one?
So Tim Williams says, "I love the Stephen Avery episode. I was hoping you guys would cover that. Great show." So yeah, and thank you for liking what we did with it, because obviously we know most people know what Stephen Avery is.
Right.
But the fact that you wanted us to do it and you liked it, that's fucking great, dude.
Yeah, we appreciate that, Tim, because, yeah, that's true. I mean, we knew doing it that it was a story a lot of people knew about, and we tend to go to the obscure.
Right.
Which I prefer doing, because it's stuff people don't know about. Like we did Malachi Martin, or we went up to Shakers. I mean, really,
even Catherine Knight, dude. Like,
totally. Like, stuff people aren't going to really know as much about, you know?
Yeah, it ain't no Jeffrey Dahmer, which we probably may end up doing Dahmer, but.
For sure. But like we did with Gacy, we singled out, like,
a specific thing that he did. Yeah,
yeah,
his art.
Because
yeah.
We knew that the story of Gacy, when we did the live episode,
is very, very common.
Yeah, people know about Gacy, what he did. But we did the artwork, so we zeroed in on something specific there with the more well-known killers.
Right. So. Hell yeah.
We had one, this is funny, from Fiona Gallagher. I know that's the character on
Shameless.
So I don't think it's her, because it's a fictitious person. But if it is, Fiona, I'm glad you're listening. I like to listen to your show, but my husband thinks it's stupid. I don't give a fuck. I listen to it every week. So,
yeah, well, fuck yeah. Hell yeah. Get it on.
That's right.
Listen to that Murder Metal Mayhem. And
yeah.
Hey, just because your significant other doesn't like everything you like doesn't mean you can't like it.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing wrong with that at all, Fiona. So that's fucking cool.
And thank you.
Yeah, now we got another one here.
Mr. Muscles, Mr. Muscles. Hey, man, I don't know you, and I'm sorry, but I don't like that name.
Yeah. It's cool,
anyway,
though, dude.
Hey, whatever.
Whatever. Thanks for listening.
I was listening to you guys, the Zodiac show, the other day with some friends, and now all of them are listening to all the podcasts. I love spreading it like a case of clap in the trailer park.
Fuck yeah, man.
Jesus Christ, dude. All I got to say about that is, like, I sprig clap in the trailer park. Not for real, though. But, yeah, no, thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing, man.
Yeah,
not
turning
like
some
for
people
real.
On to
yeah,
it,
yeah, definitely. Thank
Thanks.
You, dude.
And then the last one here, Top Dog of the Cell Block. I like that one. He emails, you guys need to do Whitey Bulger. He was a sick motherfucker, and he was very
Whitey
brutal.
Did some fucked up shit, man.
Yeah, another mobster character. So this is something we like doing, the mobsters, like we did this week with Tommy Karate. But, you know, we spread them out a little bit. We did Iceman a few months back, and so we would probably do Whitey down the road at some point.
Yes, sir.
Because he's brutal. Gas Pipe was another one we talked about.
Yes, yes, yes. Gas Pipe's going to be a good
and
one,
and you know
too.
What we didn't mention, I think, at the end of the murder segment is who we're doing next week, or did we? Pee-wee.
I don't know.
Is that when you stepped out?
That's probably when I stepped out to take a piss. I think you did,
yeah. That's funny.
Yes, we are doing a Pee-wee Gaskins.
Gaskins, that's going to be fucking amazing,
man. Dude.
Wow.
That dude loved to kill people.
Yeah, he was really fucking into that shit, and it's going to be a good one, and he's just such a character. And we'll have to bust out the final truth for that one.
It's the final truth.
The final truth. And so that should be good. So thanks for listening. Kick ass. Yeah,
thank you guys.
Way
man.
To start out 2019 with a podcast.
I love it that it's literally the first day of 2019 and we're recording this shit.
I agree, dude.
Hell yeah, dude.
I agree, man. Go to murdermetalmayhem.com for t-shirts, koozies, and more. Plus, you can listen to all the shows streaming if you dig that. You could pick up my books at PeteAltieri.com, so check that out if you dig
definitely
horror.
Definitely check out his fucking books.
Suspense and stuff like that.
Yes.
Well, we can't, though, leave without doing a little jamming, a little karaoke.
Dude, the song that you're doing this time is the perfect one for the story.
It is. It is. So I think you guys will dig it. It fits totally with Tommy Karate.
It totally does fit with Tommy.
So we'll turn that shit up. So until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And one fist in motherfucking assholes.
Kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing. There were funky Chinamen from funky Chinatown. They were chopping them up. They were chopping them down. It's an ancient Chinese art. And everybody knew the part. From a painting to a slip. And a kicking from the hip. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert.
Man.